Hello and welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. In this week's live hangout, I spoke to Catherine Viner, the editor of The Guardian Australia. Catherine spoke to us about her own history as a journalist and the direction she's taken the website in, as well as the editorial decisions and the future of The Guardian as a brand. Welcome back to Mumbrella House. I'm Tim Burrows. Today's hangout guest, Catherine Viner, editor of The Guardian Australia. Catherine, welcome along.
Thank you.
Now, we should probably get straight into it. It's been about a month or so since you launched here in Australia. What's your assessment on how you've gone so far?
Well, I'm quite bowled over with how well it's gone so far, I have to say, both in terms of the numbers and journalistically. On the numbers, it's just sort of quite exciting, you know, much more than we expected. Day one was incredible, but then in a sustained way, week three was week one, for example, and it's really quite exciting. Journalistically, we've had a couple of really great exclusives, the sort of thing that I was hoping to get in the first 6 months, but we've had them already. So it's great. It's fab.
And when you talk about numbers, which to you are the most interesting numbers? Are they, you know, the number of kind of unique visitors you get over a day or a month, or is it sheer page views? Which is the one that you kind of look at first when you look at your analytics?
I mean, the one I look at first is just page views, and that's the one we have rolling all the time. In terms of what's most important, I think there's different ways of looking at it. I think number of unique users is really exciting, because when that goes up and that's gone up dramatically, that shows that you're reaching a much wider audience. But to be honest, the one that I think excites me the most are those that show that people are really engaging in a deep way with what we're doing. So that's the kind of Facebook page. Our community on Facebook is absolutely gorgeous. They just love us so much. It's a hard day. I go and have a look at the Facebook community. You know, Twitter, we've got lots of sign-ups to the daily email, more than most other Guardian emails after such a short time. The click-through rate is much higher than other Guardian emails, which again shows a real connection to what we're doing, I think. So there's all different ways of looking at it, but they're all really positive so far.
Well, a reminder that if you do want to ask a question, then the hashtag is Guardian Hangout, and my colleague Nick Christensen is keeping an eye on social media. So if you want to use that hashtag on Twitter, then please do so, or throw a comment in at the bottom of the page that you might well be looking at this on Mumbrella, if so. Now, this is almost too early to ask this, but where do you see as The Guardian's place in the Australian media landscape? You know, maybe not even so much now as where it will end up.
Well, I think we're different in quite a few different ways that give us a particular place. So, you know, we're independent. We're owned by the Scott Trust, which means that we're completely free from commercial interference and from political interference. There's no shareholders. There's no proprietor. So we have a true independence. Secondly, we're digital only. So we don't ever have to worry about doing something for the paper, which is a real liberation. It means you can find stories in different ways, tell stories in different ways, talk about them in different ways, and sort of really use all that digital has to offer and not have to suddenly switch at 3:30 to worrying about the paper. It's a big liberation.
And this must be an interesting thing for you, because of course that would have been how it would have been when you were back at The Guardian.
Exactly,
in the UK.
Exactly.
With two masters, the same brand, but two different products, I guess.
Well, it's really interesting how differently you have to think about the paper, even around one story. And, you know, it's very interesting how the liberation from that, the fact that you might start with something that's happened and think, what's the best way to tell this story? It almost certainly won't be a 450 word news story. It might be a video. It might be a series of tweets. It might be a live blog. It might be all sorts of things. And you're freed up to do that because you don't have to think about the paper. And then just the third way that I think we're really different is just how international we are. You know, The Guardian's got correspondents all around the world, and obviously a big office in the UK, a pretty big office in the US. So, you know, we can be sort of very Australian, but we can always also be very much in the world, sort of Australia's part in the world.
And I guess what's been interesting is, even in this first month for you, it'd be interesting to know how much of your traffic benefit has been from some great stories that The Guardian's broken internationally as well.
Yes, I mean, it just so happens we've had a spectacular last couple of weeks with the Edward Snowden NSA story, which to start with didn't actually play as well in Australia as it did in the rest of the world. I'm not quite sure why. Colleagues tell me that Australians don't care about privacy. I don't know if perhaps your readers can tell us about that. But, lately, certainly when Edward Snowden's gone on the run, it's played spectacularly well here, as you might imagine. So, but it's also about sort of using our resources, I think. So we have this fantastic exclusive. There was this Egyptian asylum seeker who was named in Parliament as a convicted jihadist terrorist. And we used, we had two correspondents in Cairo who did the digging in Cairo. We had a correspondent in London look into it, and in conjunction with our correspondent in Sydney. And between us, we got to the truth of it, that he actually wasn't a convicted jihadist terrorist. And in fact, the Interpol red notice was dropped. So that's because of our kind of global reach that we're able to do this story about an Australian asylum seeker.
Now, one of the things I'd be interested to sort of talk about a bit is, for me, every editor brings their own style to their role as an editor. And at heart, most editors are either a news person or a features person or maybe a sub. And I think you can almost look at certainly a newspaper and decide who the editor is almost based on the person who has the newspaper. Where do you come in that spectrum, do you think?
So, I mean, I've got a really big chunk of both in my background. I started off in features and I edited The Guardian's glossy magazine for 7 years. But I've spent the last 6 years deputy editor and Saturday editor editing the whole of the Saturday paper. I've duty edited the paper for a long time. And I've obviously been a lot involved with the website as well. So I do think I'm over everything. My instincts are generally to have a bit of mischief and a bit of chutzpah, a bit of fun with it. So that might make me a features person, but...
Welcome back to Umbrella House. I'm Tim Burrows. With me, Catherine Viner, the editor of Guardian Australian. And apologies for our slight technical problem there. We did lose you for a minute or two, but here we are. And we're back. Also with us, Nick Christensen, who's looking after social media for us today. So if you do have a question, the hashtag on Twitter is Guardian Hangout, Guardian Hangout, or ask a question in the comment thread on Umbrella. And Nick, I think I might come straight to you. Would you like to bring us a question, please?
We've got a number of questions here, Tim. This one comes from Colin, who's asking a question about, look, you've got a UK, US, Australian version of The Guardian. Will there be more versions in Japan or elsewhere?
Yeah, we're actively looking at all sorts of places. You know, we've two-thirds of our readers now are outside of the UK. It's a gigantic number who aren't in Britain. Number one is US, number two UK, number three Canada, number four Australia, number five India, number five Ireland, six India, and then some European countries. We probably look at English language countries first, but there's been a lot of interest. So, yeah, absolutely.
And I suppose one of the questions as well is what it struck me with the US launch, with you coming over here to Australia, it's very much about taking the original Guardian DNA of that London team. And I guess you can only be spread so thinly. Is that actually a limit to how many places you can launch in at once?
I think so, yes. I think if you want to keep what The Guardian is, then yes, you can overextend. So we would extend carefully.
Now... I'm not clear exactly how it works, but I know that a factor in you coming to Australia, maybe ahead of the other opportunities, is the fact that Graham Wood, the entrepreneur and philanthropist, I suppose, has put some funding behind it. What is the business model? How does it work?
It first came about because our readership went up much more in Australia than in the rest of the world. I think probably due to the revelations about phone hacking that Guardian worked on for so long. So readers were saying, why don't you come to Australia? We want The Guardian there. So we were sort of looking at it. But obviously, you know, it's to launch something new is very expensive. And that's where Graham Wood emerged. Yes, and he's a founding investor.
Okay, how does that work? Does he expect a return, for instance? Or is this in the same way with the Global Mail? He's just doing it, you know, for the goodness of journalism?
I mean, it's sort of a commercial arrangement.
Right. And one that has to remain confidential?
Yes.
Right, okay. Have you met him?
Yes.
What's he like?
Oh, well, he's fab. You know, I mean, he's very, you know, he's given us a good amount of money to do something really fantastic in Australia. So we're really grateful.
I think the number that Global Mail was promised was something like 5 million from him over time. Similar number to that?
I can't comment.
Does the business plan see you making a profit, though?
The business plan means that we have a kind of medium to long-term future in Australia. So I'm very, you know, it's a very good business plan.
Because I guess with the Scott Trust does give The Guardian the ability to look into the longer term than your typical got to hit the next quarter or the next year's numbers. And that is the same for Australia as well.
Yes, I mean, the Scott Trust model, I do think, is the perfect model for journalism. And we're just so lucky that it was set up in 1936, because what it means is that The Guardian is guaranteed to be free from commercial influence and political influence. And that's all you need to be good journalist, really.
Now, before we lost our connection earlier on, we were talking about your own experience as an editor, sort of news versus features. On your days as duty editor for The Guardian back in London, what was the hardest editing decision you had to make?
Oh.
Kind of maybe under pressure.
You know, it's obviously something that was lost in time. I think my problem is I sometimes get overexcited about stories. Never. Other editors get underexcited and put them on page 14 when it should have been on page 1. I tend not to do that.
So was there one that you put on the front page that, on reflection, you wouldn't have done there?
No? Well, no. I remember there was a huge fire. It'll mean nothing to Australian readers, but there was a huge fire at a place called Beaconsfield, which had amazing dramatic pictures, and I went.
It made a very loud bang.
Oh, you remember?
I remember. I remember reading about it, probably on the Guardian website. Actually,
well, it was, and I just put it on the front page of the paper. I mean, everyone else did. It wasn't, but it seems slightly preposterous in retrospect. I also got very excited about Michael Jackson's death. Which happened when I was using. But at the time, again, it felt like an amazing thing.
And in Australia, have you had any big decisions that you've had to make yet?
I think the great thing about editing for digital is that you can constantly update what you're doing. If you think you're underplaying something, you can promote it. If you're overplaying it, you can downgrade it just like that. And that's one of the best things. But I think, you know, obviously one of the big issues facing editors here is how much they cover speculation about their Labour leadership. And we've really tried to take a step back from that. I think readers find it boring and repetitive and don't believe it's true. And so what we've always said that, you know, when something's happening, then we'll report it. But we won't until it isn't. And that feels like it's standing against that feels like it's doing something different.
And what are your plans for the election itself? How are you going to cover that?
Well, again, I think it's really important to cover the issues that matter to people, not just the personalities. I mean, it just so happens that the personalities in Australian politics are pretty fascinating at the moment. But what really affects people's lives is what they say and what they're going to do. So we'll be really examining very closely what each side says they're going to do.
Policy, in other words.
Yeah.
Nick, let's take another question from you, if we can, please. What's social media?
We've got a few different questions here. And again, if you want to ask your question, you can do so via the hashtag Guardian Hangout. Joel Werner asked the question, when you first started, there was a bit of a controversy about whether it was soccer or football. Where do you see the sports coverage going, and does it have enough of an Australian voice?
That was a terrible day. But those 24 hours that we called it soccer, we'll never get those back again. It's football. I'm a sports fan. I'm really keen on covering a sport as much as we can. Obviously, it's very popular here, and there are lots of codes and lots of journalists covering lots and lots of codes. So I think we are trying to see where we can fit into the market. We're doing lots of experiments. I'm really enjoying AFL, for example. Our Socceroos coverage had phenomenal traffic. We have a very particular brand of football coverage, which I think is really great, and Australian readers really seem to like. So, but you know, we're definitely looking at Australian sport, and you know, the Australian cricket team is a real gift to us at the moment. So now, thanks for that.
Now, over by over, the Ashes is quite iconic, the way that the Guardian covers cricket generally, but over by over in the Ashes is completely addictive. But unashamedly English in tone, or it has been up to now. You know, personally, I was in Dubai for the last Ashes, and that was how I followed it. And I, you know, there were books that the book of the tweets, is it cowardly to pray for rain, etc. How are you going to do it this time around? Are you going to have two separate teams?
We're looking at it. We're working on it. We'll get back to you on that one.
You have to decide quite quickly, don't you, though?
Yeah, we're working on it. Yeah.
It's coming up first.
It is.
Nick, another question from you, if we can, please.
Madonna asked, Catherine, do you think there is a mainstream media bias against Julia Gillard?
What an interesting question. I think the media in Australia seems very keen to speculate about the leadership of the Labour Party. I think I understand why. I think, you know, I know when it happened last time that everyone felt that they missed it. No one wants to be the one to miss it. It's also quite an interesting soap opera. And by the way, I don't just think it's the media's fault. I know for a fact that there are many politicians in Canberra whispering in many journalists' ears all the time. So it's not just the media's fault. I mean, I can't help but feel as a fairly new arrival, I've only been here 6 months, that she gets a tougher press than a man might do in that position. But at the same time, I remember being in Britain when Gordon Brown was on his way out, and he got a really terrible press, and that wasn't about his sex. But I mean, some of the things written about Julia Gillard do seem incredibly sexist to me.
Have you had the opportunity to meet her yet?
I have, yes.
And what was the nature of that conversation?
You know, as everyone says, warm and friendly and good company.
Just the once?
Yeah.
I guess one of the things is, as someone who's been a senior journalist with The Guardian in London, is you probably get used to that sort of high level of access. Have you been getting it yet in Australia, or have you been having to kind of crowbar your way in a little bit so far?
No, it's been great, actually. I've been really made to feel welcome, really grateful.
Nick, another question from you, if we can, please.
Luke is asking, does The Guardian Australia have a significant budget for investigative journalism, or will you kind of be covering more the news of the day and what comes in via media release, etc.?
I mean, the questioner raises a good point that investigative journalism is really expensive, but it isn't always. And I think, you know, our investigation, I mentioned it earlier, I don't know if it was before we were cut off, but when we investigated what happened to an Egyptian asylum seeker who had been labelled a jihadist terrorist, that was investigative work, that was using our correspondents all around the world, and that didn't take a huge amount of investment. It just took, I think, The Guardian's global reach. So yes, we are very interested in doing investigative work, but we obviously don't have the resources of the London operation.
Now, the Australians reported that you don't pay your freelancers very much. Was that a fair report?
I don't think so. We were looking at what to set our rates at, and we looked at the Alliance's survey, which actually I think was published on Umbrella, and we're about in the middle, which I think is about the right place for a startup.
How much are you paying?
It's in the middle
for freelancers. So dollar a word.
It's in the middle, according to the Alliance's survey.
So. Some people you don't pay for. People providing comment opinion.
Oh, no, we do. We pay for everything we commission.
So everything you commission.
Yeah.
You'll publish other things that people put forward to you? Uncommissioned?
Oh, no, we would pay for that too.
Right.
Yes, okay. No. We have what you might be thinking of is the Guardian Comment Network,
yes.
Which is this fantastic idea started in London, but we're really delighted that we're doing it for Australia. Because what it does is that, you know, if you publish, somebody publishes a really good article on a small website, yeah. It could be however good it is, people might not see it, and you know, because it's on a small website. So what we would try and do is get more attention for that article by getting it up to 42 million readers around the world, which is how many readers The Guardian has. You know, it seems to me that lots of the most interesting comment journalism in particular in this country is being done on the smaller websites. So we wanted to draw attention to that with the Guardian Comment Network. I think we've only published 3 articles about it so far. So it's a small thing for us, but I think it's a really great idea.
What's the reaction so far been from rival media companies here in Australia?
Well, you'd have to ask them.
What's your impression been of their reaction?
Well, I think in some ways, you know, who would say they're against plurality in the media? You know, who would say that there should be fewer media organisations in any country? Plurality is great for democracy, and I'm sure most people wouldn't argue against that.
Nick, another question from you, please.
Commenter Kim asks, Graeme Wood's obviously funding both the Global Mail and the Guardian. She was wondering, how are you two similar, different? Where do you see the place of your organisation compared to the Global Mail?
I mean, obviously, we're completely different in that we're a big global organisation, we're international, and we're a daily news organisation. So I think we're in completely sort of different markets. I admire lots of the things they do, but it's completely separate.
You'd know, there was speculation you'd bring the two teams together at one point.
No.
Not going to happen.
No. They run completely differently.
Shared offices?
No. they're just sort of different sorts of organisations.
In terms of sort of personality, and I know that when you, I think it would be the first piece that you wrote, talking about your sort of, you know, your plans for Guardian Australia, one of the things was about bringing new voices to the, you know, to the attention of the audience. Mm-hmm. At the same time, sometimes it feels a bit like Fairfax in exile. I see a fair few ex-Fairfax people, you know, well-respected journalists. How are you finding that balance?
Well, I think if, you know, if you're going to hire journalists in Australia, they're going to come from either Fairfax or News Limited in the main. So I think that's quite an ordinary thing, although we've also got people from private media, from Fairfax Regional, from there's other places. But I think, you know, of course, there's lots of good journalists at established news organisations in Australia. And I like to think we've poached some of the best ones. But what you'll see, particularly on Comment is Free, is the sort of voices that don't normally get heard in the media. So every Friday we have a collaboration with Indigenous X, which is, and we kind of focus on the person who's hosting the Indigenous X Twitter feed that week. That's really interesting. We've had an asylum seeker talk about why he took a boat and to come here. You know, we've got a woman who's a lawyer for asylum seekers. I mean, they're just different sorts of voices that you don't see every day in the papers.
And presumably one of your roles is to come here to build a Guardian culture, you know, based on the culture of the Guardian back in London. Is this a long-term gig for you? Are you here for a couple of
Me
years?
Personally.
Yeah, what's the plan?
I'm supposed to come here for a year, but I'm having a really good time, so let's see what happens.
Okay, Nick, let's take another question, please.
We've got a couple of commenters who are asking, what's the next step for The Guardian? Will we see the Observer coming out here? Will we see a paywall? What's the next step in your view, Catherine?
I think we've made the big step, which is coming out here. So I think now it's just to really establish ourselves as an Australian media brand and get lots more readers. According to ComScore, which is the measure that we use in Britain and America, I know not so much here, but we have 1.54 million unique users in May, which is just a fantastic figure and second only to Mail Online. So to get loads more readers who spend much longer on the site and loads of stories that make a big impact in Australia as well. But we won't be going behind a paywall. It's really important to us because we have this idea about open journalism and having our readers interact with us and being open about what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong and getting our readers to share their views with us. We would really prefer that to be not behind a paywall. So that is definitely not part of the plan.
And you've answered this a number of times before. We won't see the Guardian newspaper in print, will we?
No, afraid not.
Purely for business model reasons?
Yeah, it would be uneconomic for us to do that right now. We're a digital first organisation and, digital is where everything's going and we're happy to be in that space. It's a great space to be in.
Now, one of the interviews you did earlier on, or Lenore Taylor did on your behalf early on, was with Julie Bishop, of the opposition, which it became quite a debate around nuance, I think.
I don't think it's that nuanced at all. You think it was nuanced?
Certainly, she described the story as a beat-up, or the opposition described the story as a beat-up. In a nutshell, the question was around how much cooperation a coalition government could expect around turning back the boats from Indonesia.
She suggested that having had private conversations with Indonesian officials that they would help them turn back the boats. I think Julie Bishop described it as a beat up, and then we published on our website as part of Open Journalism, we published the quotes that Julie Bishop gave to Lenore Taylor, which I think proved that we had not misrepresented her.
How has that done anything to the relationship between the two organisations?
Two organisations?
As in The Guardian and the party.
I mean, we will report fairly on all sides of politics and, and we will do that. If anyone says we don't, we'll publish the material that shows that we do.
How big will The Guardian operation get in time?
I mean, that sort of depends on how well it goes, really. We can expand. I mean, I'm certainly hoping to expand quite quickly.
And for instance, at the moment, it's mainly about news reporting and the analysis of news. You know, the sort of, I always find myself using jargon, but the deep verticals you see sort of in the Guardian UK, would you in time expect to see, you know, that deep environment coverage, social services coverage, media coverage, all of those things? Would you like to see those replicated in Australia?
I mean, we're looking at all of those. You're right that we're focusing to start with on politics because we're launching an election year. News, actually, environment's already quite a big part of what we're doing. But we are also, and commentary, but we're also doing sport already. We're doing arts and culture, food already, and we're looking at other areas to focus on. So absolutely.
Nick, another question from you, please.
We've got a question here from Fran, who asks, how many years will it take for newspapers to drop their print editions and go to a digital-only world, in your view, Catherine?
That's such a difficult question. It seems like it will... It seems to me that papers... people are less committed to papers here than in the UK, which surprised me. I thought we were in terrible crisis in the UK, but it... people seem less committed to newspapers here. I couldn't put a date on it. I love newspapers. I couldn't put a date on it. I think weekend newspapers have got longer than Monday to Friday, though.
What are your current reading habits yourself?
Here?
Yeah.
I read everything.
You get up, you read the print editions.
Oh, I see. Online. I read Australian media on my phone on the bus. That's my first. And when I wake up, turn on my laptop and look at all the websites, just check what ours looks like, look at everybody else's. And I read in more depth on the phone on the bus. Just check through the papers when I arrive at work to see if there's anything that's missed. Because here, more than in the UK, there's a big difference between the websites and the papers. So you really need to look at both here. And then at the weekend, I spend a long time with the papers. And I really enjoy that.
Nick, another question, please.
John asks, in the UK, you've got the open news list where people can, you know, contribute ideas and that. Will we be seeing anything like that or elements of that in the Australian edition?
Actually, that's a really good idea. I mean, if people think that they would contribute to it, I think that's a really good idea.
Now, in the 3 or 4 minutes that we have left, what does success look like for you? How are you going to know if you have succeeded?
Well, there's several different levels you can look at. First of all, it's the number of readers. And I think that would be a great measure for us because, you know, we want to get more readers for the Guardian. Secondly, you know, what those readers do. Do they just pop in and pop out again? Or as it seems to be with our Australian readers, that they spend a long time reading lots of different articles and then staying and commenting and being part of who we are. And that's a really great sign of success. And actually, our readers in Australia seem to be much more like that than the fly in, fly out, which is very pleasing. But as I say, it's also about having some sort of journalistic successes being talked about and perhaps becoming a place where people want to come for their news.
Nick, might be time just for perhaps one or maybe two more questions if we're lucky.
Luke's asking, given the discussion that happened between Lenore Taylor and Julie Bishop, do you think that are Liberal MPs being less helpful, or is that having an impact on your coverage with that side of politics?
I wouldn't say so, no. I mean, we've got this fantastic Lenore Taylor and Catherine Murphy, a really brilliant journalist in Canberra. They've got great relationships with politicians and all parties, all kinds of politicians, and that'll continue.
And finally, Nick, one more question.
Catherine, you're obviously a big social media user. Is there any difference in how Twitter impacts the news cycle in Australia compared to the UK or overseas elsewhere?
It doesn't feel that different, I'd say. I think it's just as energetic here. I mean, it's, if anything, perhaps more so, actually. I feel, that a lot more seems to happen on Twitter than in the UK. I might be wrong about that, but my sense is that in the UK it's more sociable and here it's more about the issues. But that could be just who I follow and who follows me.
I think that's where we'll have to leave it. Catherine, thank you very much for joining us. Apologies if we lost you in the middle and you rejoined us. And thank you also to Nick for handling the social media. More next week. Thanks very much.
That's it from the Mumbrella Cast for now. More soon. Toodle-pip.